Chatting with Sherry is presented by Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They have been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I'm really excited to welcome author, illustrator, Todd Lockwood. Hi, Todd. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well.
I hear congratulations are due. You won a big award.
I did.
The best sci-fi novel of the year?
Oh, Barnes & Noble and Amazon both put The Summer Dragon on their short list in 2016 for best of the year. So that's very gratifying.
That's pretty cool, though. That is really cool.
It's very cool. It's a huge relief. That's my baby.
Did you get a little certificate?
Nope, just bragging rights. I just keep the link to the page in my computer here somewhere.
My friend and I did a children's book called Different is Beautiful, and I couldn't afford to get the certificate, but I said, you go ahead, because she's one of my best friends, and she illustrated. And I didn't know it, but she ordered one for me, too, and she sent it to me. It's such a big deal. You get you get the gold certificate that says you won for your category and stuff. I'm such a noodle.
That's funny.
Was that sweet? But, yeah, I'm a noodle. I love that kind of stuff. I love getting certificates or, you know, little notes saying that you did a good job. Do you like that encouragement?
Pat on the back.
Yeah.
Sure, a little pat on the back is nice. I've got Chesley's and other awards hanging up on the wall upstairs. Yeah, I suppose most artistic creative types need that warm fuzzy once in a while.
Yeah, that's it. You need the warm fuzzy. Warm fuzzy is very important. Helps you get through really hard days. You look up on your wall and you say, oh, yeah, okay, I did good once. You know? You're an illustrator as well as an author. How did you always do both, or was it art first or writing first, or how did you start?
I pretty much always did both. From as long ago as I can remember, I had a pencil in my hand. Pardon me. But I grew up in the era of television and movies. I think one of my oldest memories is of Maleficent turning into a dragon as seen through the windshield of the family car.
Uh-huh. Oh, I miss drive-ins. Isn't that sad that I do, but I do.
I know. We took our kids to see Tornado in a drive-in one night in Colorado when it was very blustery and the wind was blowing hard. It was kind of exciting. And there's nothing quite like the scene in that movie of the drive-in screen disintegrating, projected on a drive-in screen. It makes
That's
it quite
cool.
Terrifying.
My memory of it is, I think the first one I remember was, I think it was Cinderella or Snow White. I can't remember which, but my parents always bundled us up in our pajamas, put us in the back of the station wagon with blankets and food and drinks and everything. And my mother saying, please don't spill anything.
It might well have been Sleeping Beauty. That was Maleficent for me. I would have been, I don't know, 3, maybe.
He saw the
anyway,
dragon.
I was always
the dragon.
I was always drawing, though. I mean, pursuant to your question, I was always drawing, but in my mind, I was drawing a movie or a TV show or a sequence of events. I love to take out a sheet of typewriter paper, because it was typewriter paper then, not printer paper.
That's right.
And just start a castle wall in the corner here, and then put a parapet, and then get some people up there, and pretty soon I'd have a full-blown siege on a castle worthy of Ivanhoe. You know, guys on ladders and people falling and dead bodies, and here comes the war machinery and guys running around. I was always telling a story with pictures, or adding pictures to a story.
Have you always been a big fan of dragons?
Well, yeah, I guess I always liked dragons. It wasn't like a huge thing. Dinosaurs was really my drug of choice of my childhood. But Ray Harryhausen and Willis O'Brien, who did the animation for, Willis O'Brien did King Kong, and Harryhausen, of course, did almost everything that came after that with stop motion animation. Sinbad, the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, or the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. But the one he got me most with was Valley of Gwangi, which had two of my favorite things. James Franciscus and an Allosaurus. Cowboys and dinosaurs. It was
interesting.
Quite cool. Valley of Gwangi. If you haven't ever seen it, and you're a dinosaur nerd or special effects nerd at all, you owe it to yourself.
I actually, my father's favorite movie from his childhood was King Kong, the original. So
it was the Star Wars
every
or
year
Jaws
from,
of its day.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing was, it was sort of like Frankenstein. You felt sorry for for King Kong because,
and he was the innocent, wasn't he?
Yes, and he was taken out of his environment. He was treated horribly, and he fell in love with a beautiful girl who scared the shit out of him.
and it was a great actioner for its day. It did a lot of things first, like pitching the growls and environmental sounds of the action to harmonize with the soundtrack.
It wasn't really
all cacophony, which is, I had this book growing up, The Making of King Kong, great big book full of photos of the sets and the story of all the guys who built all those little sets and did the animation. It was one of my...
His face was so sweet. He wasn't scary. He always looked, especially when he was looking at Fay Wray, his eyes just looked so sympathetic. I never thought he was that scary.
Yeah, he was right on that line between scary and relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think Peter Jackson did a really good job with King Kong himself. He needs to edit it himself. That story was way too long.
I saw both, but I always watched it with my dad, and he was original.
Yeah, I prefer the original. It's a perfectly told story, even if the special effects are, almost 90 years old, 80 years old.
But isn't it amazing what they were able to accomplish back then?
I know, just sheer ingenuity.
Yeah.
Stop motion. It was a new thing. That was.
It was creative.
Maybe the first
back then.
Yeah.
It was just amazing.
I think that was 1931 or two.
Yeah. That's what he saw when a couple of years later, because he saw it when he was about, because he was born in 31. And he said he was about 3 when he first saw it. So I guess they showed it in the movie house again. I don't know how they did it back then. I know that there's like art houses and stuff now, but
that's where I saw it on the big screen. The one and only time was an art house in Boulder, a little theater that ran art films. That was a treat.
Yeah.
You can see so much more. Of course, with our giant TVs now, it'd be almost as good. But
not the same as a movie theater. Nice and dark.
No.
The other thing that's kind of sweet was when my dad was really sick when he was passing away, we brought him a video to the rest home that they put him in because of the illness he had. And King Kong was one of them. And he couldn't talk because he had an operation on his throat. But he kept pointing to the screen, to the nurses, and writing, "You've got to watch this. You've got to watch this." And she's like, the nurse is like, "Huh? What?" She had no idea what he was talking about.
Just didn't understand.
It was, no, I mean, I'm just saying, he was a fan till the very end of his life. From little tiny boy to the end of his life of this movie, Stop Action.
That's
so
sweet.
I know.
That's the power of storytelling, you know. That is one of the hallmarks of us as a species, is how important our language and our stories are to, no doubt, our survival. It's such an instinct in all of us that, I'm sure, you know, the elder who knew where to find enough game in the harsher winter or whatever, those stories were essential to our survival.
Yep.
Now that we have it fairly easy, I mean, I know which supermarket has the game that I need to survive. but we still have that love and need for stories, and it's more than just physical survival. There's emotional survival.
Emotional well-being. I think it's well-being. Your emotional well-being. Because it's just, there's something comforting in a story, especially something that is, you remember from your kidhood or childhood or something. It just, it's very comforting when stuff is going wrong to, nowadays, you just can download it or hit it, put it in the DVD or whatever. But just to watch something like one of your childhood movies, you're having a bad day and you stick that in, it makes you feel a little better. Stories are very, or reading a favorite novel or whatever, just something to comfort.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite writer, an author that inspired you or that you just love?
Oh, a number of them, yeah. I mean, my favorite book of all time is probably To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's
just so beautifully constructed and so earnest and sincere and meaningful in so many ways. The time in this country when it came on the scene was important, and what it had to say was important, but such beautifully drawn characters.
And it was unusual that she was very involved with the movie. Usually authors during the time of the studio, old movie studios, authors were not thought of as that important, but the producer really kept her involved, and Gregory Peck kept going with his book and looking over the script, making sure everything was correct. And it was very,
well, it was a Pulitzer Prize winning book already, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, they treated F. Scott Fitzgerald horribly. Just because he won prizes and stuff doesn't mean that much to the studio chiefs at that time.
And
that time they really treated
Frost,
writers terrible.
Gregory Peck will always be Atticus in my
mind. He was brilliant.
And
brilliant,
little girl
brilliant
was perfect
in any part that he played.
Yeah. And Robert Duvall's first role is Boo Radley.
Yeah. You know, funny. I saw that the first time in school, and I didn't realize who it was. And then I saw it later on television. I went, oh, my God, that's Robert Duvall.
So, yeah, Harper Lee definitely ranks in there among my influences. I may have been channeling that family just a little bit in the first parts of Summer Dragon.
Really?
But I also absorbed Stephen King, not because I'm a fan of horror, but because he just writes so beautifully and his characters are so real. So I feel like Stephen King was something of a mentor by example of how it's done
great.
Well.
He is a great writer. He's very he's a very visual writer. Maybe that's why.
Very visceral. He knows how to get into your head.
Yeah. I love how he just paints the book that you could just see it as you're reading it. He's very talented. Obviously, I mean, Matt's won Pulitzer Prizes. But I'm just saying, it's amazing how you. There's certain writers you read that are, as you said, visceral. That you. It's not just you read it, you feel it, you see it. It becomes a part of your own psyche. That's true talent, and I think you know there's not that many people like that.
No. As far as in the science fiction fantasy genre, I read Robert E. Howard. I liked his Conan stories. Again, just the way he wrote, he just had a certain way of turning phrases that nobody who picked up after he committed suicide could quite rate Conan the same way. Conan the Barbarian. Conan, I should say. I'm saying Conan. Like, Conan O'Brien was this heroic character.
I picked up who you meant. Don't worry. I think everybody did.
H.P. Lovecraft, his dark stuff.
Yeah. My dad introduced
me. The Dunwich Horror was probably the first story I read that actually chilled me to the bone and made me not want to get out of bed in the middle of the night.
I read one book by him, and I couldn't read any more. I've never read another horror book, even though I interview people who do horror. He scared me to death. I mean, and it wasn't like a Friday the 13th thing. It's a psychological scare.
Yeah.
So it's
in
even
your head
more.
With,
yeah.
With elder
really
gods. Yeah. So he was a freak.
Yeah.
I liked him.
He was
and I read Lord of the Rings multiple times, of course. It's most of the fantasy that I enjoy, really. I can't always read modern fantasy. Although I played Dungeons and Dragons with my friends for decades. And that was probably my fantasy fix.
You
David,
don't read any modern fantasies?
No. In the 80s, I tried to read several fantasy series because we were playing D&D and we were kind of in that mode. And friends recommended them. And there were just one after another that started out well and then just kind of meandered off or never got picked up again. And by the time Game of Thrones began or Wheel of Time, I was just kind of done picking up fantasy series that were either going to meander off or not deliver. And so I haven't read either of those series. And it's to a point now where I don't have time to read that many books from one author.
I was going to ask you about Harry Potter, but I guess that's a no.
Well, I did read most of the Harry Potter books. I never read the last two. But it was largely because I had kids in the house and they enjoyed them. And they're like popcorn. They're just page turners. it's just, you go back for one more bite, one more bite, one more bite, and then the book is done. And they're wildly entertaining and clever. So, yeah, I like Harry Potter. But I appreciate things like Game of Thrones on HBO or the Harry Potter movies because they can catch me up where I don't have time to read so much, especially since I'm illustrating and writing. Time I used to spend reading, I spend doing other things.
Yeah. Do you have any books that you read that are like off of that track? Just I don't know, like nonfiction or like some other genre. Just so you have something like that you could take on vacation.
A couple come to mind. Well. You know, when I take a book on vacation with me, it always ends up living in my suitcase, it seems like. But usually I'm at a convention where I'm working and then visiting with friends. And, you know, by the time I'm alone to do anything, it's...
Okay.
But there's a few really good books that I've picked up recently. A Walk in the Park, or A Walk in the Woods, rather, by... I think it's Bill Burris, Bill somebody. We should look that up.
I think that was one of the top 20 books in America on PBS. A Walk in the Woods.
It's so good. It takes me right to Bill Bryson. There you go, Bill Bryson. 1998 memoir of his effort to hike the Appalachian Trail from south to north. But it was really entertaining, frequently laugh out loud funny, often poignant. I haven't seen the film because I'm not certain it can live up to the book.
I have this weird thing. I like to watch the movie before I read the book because... No, it's the other way around. I like to read the book and then see the movie. Because first you read the book, and then you can have, like, annotation of the movie.
Right.
Because you're going to be disappointed. So you have to think of a way not to be disappointed, and that's the only way I can do it.
So how many movies have you not seen because you haven't read the book yet?
Probably quite a few. I don't really know by heart. I try to watch movies, but I haven't been able to afford to go out to see that many movies. It's so expensive to go to a movie now. But I watch a lot of the stuff when it comes on HBO.
Right.
So by then, I've read the book.
There's so many outlets now. How do you keep up with all of them? Netflix and Prime and...
I don't have those.
All those different ways you have of accessing stuff to watch.
I don't have those.
Well,
sorry.
All right. More time to read, I guess.
I watch it like on HBO and Showtime and stuff like that, or I watch it on DVD.
Yeah, I like DVDs. Were you a Marvel Universe fan?
Will you hate me if I say no?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I didn't like superhero comics when I was a kid. They puzzled me. I didn't get all the, you know, skin-tight uniforms and bit by a radioactive this or that, and there just was an endless array of them. But I did have the Spider-Man issue that introduced Dr. Octopus, and I collected Magnus Robot Fighter comics for a while.
Cool.
But I kind of enjoyed the arc of the movies.
But I think I watched Superman because Christopher Reeve played Superman, and he was gorgeous.
wrong universe, though. DC Comics, Batman, Superman.
I know, but that's the only one I can think of.
Had a great run. Right. Well, the first one was fun with Christopher Reeve and Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman, great actor, too. I mean, all the actors that were in Superman, the first Superman, were all really first-class actors. That's another reason I liked it.
it was lots of fun. And it made fun of Superman to a certain degree, too, which I appreciated. I always liked Batman because Batman was just a guy. His superpower was that he was rich and a little crazy. But he wasn't radioactive. He couldn't jump over buildings. He just had a lot of cool stuff and an attitude to go with it.
Did you have, how did you feel about, because I grew up watching the series Batman.
Right.
So
my folks wouldn't let us watch that for some reason. I think they didn't understand it. I'd watch it when I could, and I've watched it in reruns since, and it's silly, campy fun.
It's fun. It's just, it's not serious. I mean, he's walking, they're walking up the side of the building, and Sammy Davis Jr. goes, "Hi, man." You know, I mean.
I know. Everybody in Hollywood wanted to get a cameo popping out of a window as they were crawling up the wall.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I think, what's his name from Laughing? Artie Johnson. As one of the characters from Laughing was in one, popped out one of the windows. I mean, it was a fun show.
Yeah,
but I
it
mean,
was fun.
Are you anti that because you love the Batman show? Because I hear that there are people
I'm not anti that at all. I appreciate satire and tongue-in-cheek humor immensely. You know, after the original Night of the Living Dead, the only zombie movies I can tolerate have their tongue firmly planted in their cheek, like Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland. Those are fun because they're funny and they don't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah. What was the one that I saw when I was a kid that I hadn't... I put it on television. I did not know what it was. Oh, it was The Blob with Steve McQueen.
The Blob with Steve McQueen.
It was the dumbest. I love Steve McQueen, so that's why I put it on. And I was like, what on earth is this? Look.
It's pretty dumb. That's your late 50s, early 60s sci-fi horror for you. I didn't have a lot of use for that movie, apart from the fact that Steve McQueen, first role, pretty funny. But if you want something good from that era, you'd go... Forbidden Planet.
Oh, I love Forbidden Planet. That's one I really like. That's a little campy, but it's really fun.
Yeah, because it's
wonderful.
But it's
actors.
Got a great story. Yeah, Leslie Nielsen,
I mean,
when he was a leading man. Walter Pigeon.
Walter Pigeon and Leslie Nielsen. I mean, great actors. What was her name?
I'm trying to come up with it too. Annette? No.
Anne. Wasn't she married to Ernie Kovacs? Or am I thinking someone else?
I don't know.
Anyway, she was really good as the daughter of Walter Pigeon. Sorry, I think she passed on, but if you haven't passed
it's
on,
Frank.
I'm sorry.
No, not Frank. You may want Anne because of an Anne Frank connection, but it might be Frank or Francis. Connie Francis? No.
No, it's not Connie.
I'm trying
Francis.
To get
Connie,
the,
I would remember. I'm a huge fan
I'm
of
trying
Connie.
To get to the IMDb. See, now I'm determined to know, so I have to look it up. Forbidden.
I think it was
1956. Back when Walt Disney was the industrial light and magic of the day.
Yeah. The most creative, one of the most creative producers and people out there.
And for Anne Francis, not Connie, and it was Anne, but not Anne Frank. Anne Francis.
I was right, it was Anne. Yes.
Anne Francis.
Yeah, she was wonderful.
She was like
she
a teenager, I think.
Yeah, she was a kid. She was in some other movie. She was in a movie with Debbie Reynolds, a competition over Dick Powell. Can't remember the name of the movie. I have the weirdest memory. You throw a movie star's name out, and my mind starts picturing movies that they were in.
She has a long career record here.
Oh, yeah. I think if I remember right, she worked until she passed.
That's entirely possible. Well, in 1956, she was not new to anything. This only seems to be TV shows, not movies.
Well, and a lot of the young actors in the 50s that couldn't get a studio project went to live television, and they really got reputations from doing stuff like The Twilight Zone or Playhouse 90.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got their movie contracts. Like Walter Matthau and Grace Kelly
James
Dean.
Oh, really? She started out on TV. Wow.
Yeah, she was in she was in Playhouse 90. In fact, she did a play with James Dean. That's what made me think of James Dean. Yeah, there was a lot of people who did live TV shows, live plays, theater, like Playhouse 90. And the Dick Powell Theater and things like that. They did, it was that transition period before the movie industry realized that they can work with the television industry and they only thought of them as the enemy.
Huh.
Later on, of course, they learned, oh, we can work with them.
Right.
They can advertise our movies. but then people could slip through that because, like, I Love Lucy, they hired all these movie stars because they were friends with Desi and Lucy.
Right.
So you never know.
Desi and Lucy who gave Star Trek a chance.
Exactly. Mission Impossible.
Really? That was theirs too?
Yes. Desi Lu did Mission Impossible, Star Trek, and The Untouchables.
Oh. Huh.
And what's really funny was that, what's the guy from Chicago, the mobster? Al Capone. Desi actually went to school with Al Capone's son.
Who did? Oh, Desi did?
Desi Arnaz, senior. When he was a kid, he went to I don't even remember what school it was, but he went to school with. So when he did The Untouchables, he got some nasty letters from his ex schoolmate about what he's doing to his father.
That's for me.
Sorry. That was interesting.
Your dad shouldn't have been a mob boss.
Exactly. But yeah. But The Untouchables was one of the ones that came from Desi Lu too. Do you have, when you do your art, is it something that, what inspires your art? Is it what you're writing that inspires your art? Or is it something, does your art inspire your writing? Or is it go back and forth sort of like a ping pong ball?
It goes back and forth. I don't think my art inspires my writing any more than my writing inspires my art. I don't know. I'm just always thinking about something.
Well, that's good. That's very good. You should always be thinking about something. What is your, do you have like, when you're illustrating one of your books, do you have like, do you, do a picture board before you do it? Todd? Oh, we lost Todd. Hold on just a minute. I'm sure he'll call right back. Hi, Todd. I'm hoping you call back.
Yeah, we got dropped somehow. I'm not sure what happened. Just suddenly you were gone.
That was weird. Yeah, I asked you a question and you weren't there. So I gave us a little musical interlude. just till you called back.
Let's go out to the lobby. Let's go to the lobby.
Yeah, everybody could go to get their munchies or whatever. Isn't that what that was for? So everybody knew to go get your snacks or go to the bathroom.
We can own that for sure.
I don't know. That was before my time going to the movies. I never saw that actually.
I know about the drive-in. It. That was the drive-in, the dancing popcorn and soda bottles. Entice you out of your car to go feed your junk food hole.
Yeah, and you have to dance to go with music, right?
Yeah.
I'm joking.
So where were we? What were you asking?
We were talking about your books and your writing and your illustration. And whether one inspires the other, and you were saying that you didn't think that either inspired the other, or then you got cut off, so I don't know what we were going to say.
Okay. Well, I was probably blathering on about how most of the painting I've done has been commissioned for book covers or game product of one sort or another, and so the story isn't usually mine. That was one of the things that inspired me to want to write a book, was I wanted to own something that was done wholly to suit my own druthers, and that's what the Summer Dragon is. And I was the audience for that book. I just wrote the book I wanted to write. But that was something
I
learned from personal work way, way back when. I did a drawing of Cerberus for my D&D group, because I was going to send them to hell to kill him. And it turned out really kind of freaky. I almost didn't take it to my first convention because I thought people will think I'm just completely twisted. But I am a little twisted. I mean, there's nothing dishonest in that piece. And I learned something about honesty from that, because everybody responds to it. Like H.R. Geiger, you know, we all have that lost person inside us that doesn't know how to express itself. And so when someone else does it for you, you respond. That demon in your skull stops rattling the cages for a second and says, yes, it's like that.
That makes sense. So it's like another way to deal with the negativity that's going on in your own head.
Sure. I mean, we all wrestle with our issues, whatever they might be. And there's something cathartic in artwork that's done with an intensity of purpose, the expression.
And we don't have that much time. What is on the slate next? Do you have a new book you're working on?
I am working on the sequel to The Summer Dragon. I've got it nearly written, but it's stepping aside momentarily while I polish up and get ready a new art book for Kickstarter. October 1st. But stand by, you know, find me on Facebook or visit my website and sign up for notifications, toddlockwood.com. And as soon as it's live, I'll be letting everybody know all the freaking time. But that's the biggest project currently slated. We're looking at 300 pages of art spanning 40 years, really.
Well, that's really exciting. And when is that due to come out?
Well, that will
depend on a lot of
things.
Or do you have a due date?
Well, we have a Kickstarter launch date, and assuming all goes well, then we'll have the funds to put it into production. I've already got a designer working on it. I've already got it all timelined out and all the artwork chosen and uploaded, but there's still a great deal of design work left to do, and I hope to have all of that done by the end of the Kickstarter so that we can go through the printing process and hopefully have this in hand in time for Gen Con next year, if not sooner.
Cool.
So,
do you go? You said you go to conventions. Are you going to anything that's coming up, or do you have a signing for your book, or a signing for your art, or anything like that where people
no,
fans can
no signings
meet
currently.
You?
Next thing slated for me is Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, which is usually in March, I believe. And I like to attend MISCON as kind of a relaxing, small, surrounded by friends kind of convention. That's in Missoula, Montana, at the end of May. And then I always do DragonCon in Atlanta over the Labor Day weekend. It's my favorite show, bar none. The costumes are incredible. The vibe is excellent. It's fun.
Yep.
It's the
it
only
is
convention
weird
that has a parade through the downtown of people in costume that goes on for 2 or 3 hours.
It is funny to go to a small con to meet up with your friends and to, you know, do your stuff and go on panels and watch panels and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to the big con and sort of like this weird carnival atmosphere that you're kind of you're a part of, but you're more watching than you're really participating.
Yeah, it's Dragon Con is unique.
If
they ever move it from the downtown hotels to the big event center they have, it will completely change the vibe. I mean, a big part of the charm of it is that it's downtown in these old hotels with, not old, but, you know,
right.
It's scattered amongst hotels, which makes it awkward sometimes, but also very personal, and it contributes to the level of costumes because people are right there in their hotel and they have a room where they can change or touch up or whatever, which is difficult in a convention hall.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's no place to go except
unique.
The bathroom.
That's right.
Yeah, there's no place to go except the bathroom. I mean, it's better to have a be able to zip into your room for a few minutes.
Yeah. So what else? I've been hearing good things about a new convention in L.A. called Lightspeed, I think. I think it was.
What's that? I never heard of that one.
I don't know. It's brand new. They just had their first year, and a lot of folks who I know went and said it was very well done. So I could open my email and figure that out. It's one I might be willing to check out. I used to go to the San Diego Comic-Con. It just happened. This last week, I think.
Oh, okay.
Can find it.
What about San Diego Comic-Con?
I used to do San Diego Comic-Con. I did it for a better part of a decade, but it just became less and less friendly to artists. It just became too much about the movies and the giveaways and the free stuff from the big game companies. It came to a point where my wife and I realized we could have had a really nice convention vacation any other weekends in the convention in San Diego for less money than we lost doing this show.
And there's a lot to do in San Diego. You could have had a lot of fun.
Yeah, rather than sitting at a table losing money. And it was always fun because I got to see friends and meet new people, and you know, the occasional celebrity would wander by, which was always amusing.
It was very uncomfortable. I mean, it was fun. I really loved it. I had a panel. It was great. I met some really amazing people. But I like small conventions. I get nervous when it's too many people. You know?
Yeah, but those big shows can be... It's nice to have a booth to escape to. When the crowds in the hallways and the aisles are shoulder to shoulder, and you're all just kind of shuffling because it's impossible to move fast, that's uncomfortable.
Very. That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So it was very scary. I'm happy to be in the art show in the bottom of the Hyatt at Dragon Con. Because I have a place to occupy that I'm not bumping shoulders with people, and it's not super crowded. They just redid the art show this year, and it's super chill. It ran very, very well, and people had a really good response to it. The booths were bigger. There was more room to wander about, and that's my speed.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the convention hall with the people shoulder to shoulder.
When I was at Comic-Con, you know where I escaped to? The autograph area. They had like a little area where you could sit. You could just sit there and be comfortable. And there was like the people that were there in line for their autographs. So it wasn't like a big bunch of people, a wave of humanity coming at you like down in where the merchandise area is. So it was much more comfortable for me up there. I met Lee Merriweather, so it was cool.
Oh, huh? How fun.
She's a nice lady.
I got to meet Nichelle Nichols, Uhura. Oh my God, me and my memory. And Louis Gossett Jr.
Uh-huh.
Who else? Walter Koenig wandered by my booth in San Diego once. Ray Bradbury, toward the very end of his life, in a wheelchair, stopped at our booth. And I got to shake his hand.
One of the nicest people I've ever met was Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, and definitely one of my inspirational authors when I was a kid. You know, I have to take back what I said about H.P. Lovecraft being the first to scare the willies out of me, but it was Ray Bradbury with Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Oh, I never read that one. I Sing the Body Electra.
I Sing the Body Electric?
Electra. Yeah, it was one of the short stories.
Oh.
That was the first one I ever read. We're running out of time. People can get in touch with you. Do you have a website that you can give people?
Yeah, same one I gave them a minute ago, toddlockwood.com.
I know, but give it to them again.
Go to toddlockwood.com, sign up for notifications. I don't spam you. In fact, I haven't sent out a newsletter in probably months. But if news occurs on either book coming up, whether it's the art book or the sequel to The Summer Dragon thing, and if you want to get in touch with me, you can write todd@toddlockwood.com. And if nothing else, you can find me on Facebook, and everything will be posted there as well, and we can chat from time to time.
Okay. And you're just your name on Facebook, right? Or do you have a Facebook page?
Yeah, I have a personal page, and I have a fan page. And
what your fan page different? What's it say?
Hang on a second. My browser is not letting me navigate.
How rude.
Well, I have something in the search field. Okay. Fan page. Try Art of Todd Lockwood in your search bar on Facebook. All one word, Art of Todd Lockwood. Should take you to me.
Great. And I want to thank you for taking the time out to come on the show. I do hope you enjoyed yourself. I did.
Yeah, it was fun.
And thank you for coming on, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Alrighty, thank you for having
me. Thank you.